The struggle is real for women of color in leadership. From battling race and cultural biases to silencing that relentless inner critic, it's a lot. Welcome to Unshackled Leadership, a lantern for Black women. Here we will share, teach, and laugh, yes, I said laugh, as we guide you from just being excellent to stepping boldly into your zone of genius. I'm Joya Jefferson Nuri, your host and ICF certified leadership coach. Ready to level up together? Let's do this. Thanks for joining us again. Today we explore the realities, challenges, and triumphs of Black women in the workplace here in America. Joining us today is the brilliant Malia Lazu, founder of the Lazu Group, who has dedicated her career to carving out spaces for us in corporate America, while proving to the powers that be that equity isn't just a right, it's profitable. So let's dive into the conversation. Malia, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you, Joya. It's always great to be on.
You know, now the DEI and woke are illegal words. What's that mean to Black women?
You know, I don't think now is the time to be cynical, right? And pretend that you and I live the same struggles as Harriet Tubman or, you know, whatever, right? DEI put a lot of us in positions. It allowed for us to show our worth. It actually is meritocracy, DEI, right? Because it means that white boys got to compete against you and I in things. And we know that they're also, you know, that it wasn't an easy road then, right? So, you know, but I think what it means for Black women is that we have to continue to fight to be in certain positions of power. And I think we're going to see a lot less of us be, you know, get there, right? There's going to be less spaces in institutions because there's going to be a whole lot more mediocre white men.
You know, that's an interesting point because it has been my premise that this is about mediocre white men. Because, you know, Jamie Dimon is not worried about them or us. Okay. The new head of American Express and the past head of American Express doesn't feel this competition. But it is about the average white guy who can't compete on that level thinking somebody took his spot.
A spot that he didn't have. He didn't have that. It wasn't, you know, we're not playing musical chairs, right? You weren't sitting in the chair and I pushed you out and I sat in it. We went up for the position, right? But again, and you know, I see DEI as a outcome of the civil rights movement, right? The civil rights movement was Black women, Black men, you know, a lot of different whatever, saying we have value. And once we were able to see we have value, corporations started letting us, right? We started to be able to get in to show our value.
Right.
And that's really what DEI allows for. It allows for us to show our value within institutionalized space.
Well, I know this is your space at the Lazu Group. You have been working diligently for years before there was a word DEI acronym DEI to do this, to convince corporations that it is profitable. I have so many other places to go with this interview, but I want to establish that right now. Tell me the work of the Lazu Group.
So we work with corporations, institutions, you know, larger nonprofits to help them shift their institutional culture, their organizational culture to be more equitable, more curious, right? More empathetic. And what that allows for is that allows for a diverse group of people to be included and to give you their best stuff, to give you the stuff that makes your business more profitable, right? When we see that DEI is 34% more profitable, DEI teams are 34% more profitable, you only see that if the woman, if the vet, if the person with disabilities, if, you know, the Latino person, if the Black person is bringing their whole selves. If they're just trying to act like a white boy, then you're not going to see that profitability, right?
Right.
But there's a reason why diverse teams are 70% more likely to enter new markets. And so I help companies, and we help companies create a culture that will allow for the best people you have to thrive in your environment.
Okay. So now the word DEI in the federal government is illegal, right? What does that mean to your corporations?
Well, DEI being under the microscope and being illegal, I think scares a lot of my corporations, right? I mean, they've, you know, a lot of them have scrubbed their website. And when I say scrub their website, I mean literally find and replace, right? Like places where they talked about diverse revenue streams, right? Equitable investments, right? Things that have nothing to do with race or gender or whatever.
Right.
They took out because they didn't want these, you know, AI bots, right? That, you know, this hatchet job that the Trump administration is doing to civil rights and human rights. They didn't want to get caught up in that. But what it's also doing for some companies is it's having them understand that the work they thought they did and was doing, you know, in this post-racial, you know, the progress they think they've made, right, is actually not true. And so, you know, for some folks, they're figuring out how to sit in culture, right? Some of them want to still continue to call it a DEI, you know. I mean, you have people who want to get subpoenaed, right? They want to have this fight so they can explain.
Yeah.
But I think for, you know, I mean, we can see for our business, our, you know, our like DEI, you know, sort of working with DEI offices and, you know, that, I mean, that has been drastically reduced.
Right.
You know, and it's much more now the work around culture. Mm-hmm. You know, but what we do know and what I want to reiterate, because I worked with our attorney general in Massachusetts, and then 16 states ended up signing on to her guidance, right? And joined us in creating this guidance that employment law is also still legal.
Yeah.
And so you still can do employee resource groups. You still can, and you should, right? Because you want your biggest investment, as much as you might think it's AI, it's actually the people in your company.
Yeah.
And if they're not, if they're doing a half-assed job or the least they can do, you're going to see that in your bottom line.
Right, right. Right. And I think that that's just fair. I don't think any company is going to keep you because you're Black. Nobody's going to keep you before you. Now, you can go out and say you were fired because you were Black. But if they have an HR record that says you only showed up to work at half the week, then you can't argue that. And that is a detriment to everybody else. So,
and that doesn't really exist. I want to be on, I think we have these red herrings, right? Like, mm-hmm. Most civil rights employment law cases are legitimate cases, yeah. Right? And most actually lead, you know, I mean, Bank of America is willing to write hundreds of millions of dollars a year in equal opportunity, you know, equal employment stuff, mm-hmm. Right? So unfortunately, I think what we're finding out right now is we're actually more racist than we are greedy. And I write about that in my book, From Intention to Impact. I ask the question, are we racist or are we greedy? And I think what we're finding out is that we're actually racist, right? That we actually will kill DEI rather than defend it the way any other company would defend any other business practice that they have against a government regulation.
Now that leads us right into the discussion I want to have here.
Yay!
We are more racist than we are greedy.
I think we're finding out.
I think that we are finding it out. I think everybody's finding that out. I am a fan of Ezra Klein. He's a writer for the New York Times, and he has a podcast on a couple times a week. And he was talking about, he had a guest on several weeks ago, and it was conversation about the minds of white men, pretty much. That's what the conversation was. And this guest was saying that what America has done is woken up and realized she's not as white as she wants it to be. Her standards of whiteness are changing and shifting into hip hop and multicolored hair and brown people of all from everywhere. Their children are marrying brown people. And they look up and that, you know, John Standish guy from Plymouth Rock is not represented. And they really want to go back to Plymouth Rock when white people had the ability to steal the land, kill the people, and enslave everybody else.
And make America great again.
What, are we talking about 1619?
But it wasn't even America.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even America, but that's where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go back to 1776? Is that when we were great? Like, what year were we great? 1930, Alabama?
Right.
Was that when we were great?
Concentration camps for Japanese?
Yeah, the concentration camps for Japanese. Is that when we were great?
Mm-hmm.
So the state of Black women in this, we know that 92% of Black women, we know that 92% of Black women voted against Donald Trump, right?
And I just got one thing to say. Candace Owens, look at that number. And weep, because you and your five friends voted for Trump and no other Black women did. Go on.
I tried to avoid her.
I do too, but I'm just saying.
I heard her speak one time.
It's like she's in that eight, you know what I mean? Her and her 10 friends. Like, that's it. Like, that's what we showed. It's not a lot of us at all.
Right, right. That's what we showed. That's what we showed. So there's this beautiful meme of Black women sitting on top of a building drinking wine while the rest of the city burns to the ground.
Yes. And I think they're drinking coffee, but I love that you and I see wine. Go on. Because we're going to be drinking wine.
We'll be drinking wine. You can bring some coffee. But we're going to be drinking the wine. But yeah, I think you're right. They're drinking coffee. Whatever. They're staying away from the new revelation. They're not going to need a nap. But
that's right.
What do you see now? I probably want a narrow answer to a broad question, but what do you see as the state of Black women now?
Maybe reclamation, if you want a short answer.
Reclamation. Explain.
I think we're reclaiming our time. I think we're reclaiming ourselves. I think we're reclaiming redefining what it means to be in community. And I think that poster and even the very pride that 92% brings, I think shows the answer forward. Us.
Us. Expand on that, please.
Well, you know, we're often stretched, you know, we need to support all and everything.
Yeah.
And a sister got out there and was so much more competent. I mean, basically what we saw was so many of our promotions that so many Black women live through every day.
Yeah.
Right? Where you might not like me, but I am better than Donald. You know what I'm saying?
My mom
set all this on fire.
Yeah.
And I am better than him. And yet Donald, because he plays golf with the CEO, right, or whatever, whatever, Donald got the job. And I think us watching it at this stage where Kamala was so well behaved, right? I mean, said things that I wish she wouldn't, some of the things she said, right? I mean, she was just looking towards white women, seeing white women as her margin of victory, and taking, you know, the hits about not being black, whatever, whatever, and still lost. And I think for us, it allowed black women to say, you know what? Actually, this year, I'm going to put my mask on first.
Yeah.
And then we're going to see what we're going to do.
Right, right. And while everybody else is running around with their hair on fire, I'm going to put my mask on first and see what we want to do. Okay. And so I get that. Now, I want to add to that, what you're saying there. Okay. We have been, since arrival in this country, the moral standard. We made the country live up to its creed. We have always been sometimes at the threat of death. We have always been this place, in this place where we can be forgiving, understanding, and hoping for the future. I think this election, if I look at my 10 girlfriends and the people I talk to, this was the election where we said, all hope is gone. They're going back to 1619, and we need to thrive for ourselves, but we're not going to spend time fixing them.
That's it. It's about us. That last straw. Like, you know, when you're in a relationship and, you know, you're like, oh, like, he's a pain in the ass, but the sex is good. Like, he doesn't. Well, let me speak for myself. I have been in relationships where I'm like, there's reasons why I'm staying, but I'm not really happy. Right. And those reasons seem like good reasons. We have a nice hot. We live together.
Yeah.
Right, we have a nice house. The sex is good. It makes me feel like I'm not alone. All of these things. And then you like find out he's cheating on you. And you're like, wait a second. I wasn't even in my full bliss. Like, I was looking past things because of this thing we made together. This home, right? Our lovemaking, whatever it is. And you just didn't give it, like, the social agreement has been broken, right? You break the social agreement that I'm trying to maintain.
Yeah.
Right? And not always, but there for, you know, a lot of times when relationships break up, there's that thing where you're like, oh, I'm done now.
Yeah.
Right? Now I am done. It wasn't the 35 women before. For some reason, it's this one, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think that's really where we are, you know, like, I think we have a certain pride in being the conscience of the country.
We did, exactly, right?
I think we have a certain pride in our magic, in how beautiful, how much we can save, you know, like, I mean, we are the superhero of the story. And now we're saying, wait a second, when a bunch of superheroes get together, like, they just have fun, right? Like, they don't have to save nobody, right? Like, they just do, like, superhero games. And that's what we're doing in 2025, right? We're not using our superpowers to save white America.
Right, right.
We're using our superpowers to save the black women we know. Because I would also say that, you know, I think moving forward, for at least for this year, it's local. I think, and by local, I mean you, right? I don't think it's going to DC, right? Like, I don't think it's that. I think it's you and your sister girls creating a safe life for all of you, right? Like, whatever that looks like.
You know, it's interesting you just say that, because I found myself in my hair salon, I mean, going to the hair salon, and on our way out, woman and I were both checking out at the same time, you know, giving the credit card to doing whatever we were doing. But she was finished before me. And I found myself, as we were chatting while we're paying, and as she was leaving, I found myself saying, "Stay safe." That caused her to turn completely back around. And we talked about what safety meant for us in this. And we both had the same attitude. Buy a gun. Make sure all your papers are right. Keep cash in the house as much as you can. $5,000 if you can do it. More if you have it. Accumulate that if you don't have it now, if you can. Okay? Know where your children are. We had a whole list of things that a year ago, we would not have had this conversation.
Exactly.
And when you're talking about, it's about the sisters taking care of each other now, taking care of us now, because I think we're going to start doing the rations for the war. Because that's the sort of attitude I have feeling across the board. Across the board. I went to two conferences over the last, they were back in March. And both of them were women executives of all races, from all places in the culturally from the world in the United States, in Chicago and in Washington, D.C. All the women in there were feeling that no matter what their race was.
Mm-hmm.
They were feeling this under siege, and we need to come together to do this. And so you get people in those rooms who come to women's conferences and a room full of women executives. Everybody is under siege, okay? Because a lot of them, white and black, are DEI hires. They wouldn't have considered a woman executive unless there was a DEI requirement to interview, like the Rooney Rule in football. Like the Rooney Rule in football, you have to at least interview, which is a good rule. Look how many black coaches there are now, okay? And Latino coaches.
And could be more.
It could be more, but it's better than it was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, at least it gets us at bat.
And the ones who are at bat right now are swinging pretty good. They're hitting home runs. Okay? In the NFL, they're hitting home runs. So this was a conversation where there were allies. And I asked several of them, black and white, what are you doing when you had to scrub DEI? Mm. And they all, in a very flippant, head growing back, hand flying up attitude, said, "We just called it something else. We're doing the exact same thing."
Mm-hmm.
We realize we can't do this without women. We can't do this without blacks. We cannot do this without our Latin sisters. We cannot do this. And one woman told me, "If I didn't do this, I'd have no allies in the office." She's hiring allies. There's a white woman who hires other women of color around her because she knows at some point, unless she really messes up, they're going to be her ally.
So I want to jump in there and say, I don't see that often. So okay. Where you're working is amazing.
Well, no, I only heard it at a conference. I don't know how it's manifesting in the real world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You're not seeing that. Yeah.
No, I mean, and I think this is why we're talking about the 92%.
Yeah.
Right. Because white women made their choice. They showed that. Right. 47% of white women voted for women.
I'm only meeting.
No, but also at the conference, it's going to be, right, it's going to be people who have already signed up into this.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. You know, yeah. So that's different, right, than actual corporate, right? Like you're self-selecting, right? You're coming in for a reason. But no, what we're seeing is that they're changing the name. They're defunding it.
Yes.
Right. So I know DEI folks who have had to take pay cuts to keep their jobs.
Or lost their jobs altogether.
Or all they have is their staff.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you have a DEI office and that's it. Don't need pens. Don't need no post-its. Right. You got no budget. That's your salary.
And don't come meeting with us with your initiatives.
Exactly. And I think when the Supreme Court decision came out, which didn't need to have the effect that it had, I said, and I wrote actually a piece for the Boston Business Journal, the weakest hands are going to fold over this, mm-hmm. right? There was no reason for corporations to respond, but they did, mm-hmm. right? The worst thing you can do when you're being oppressed is obey in advance.
To obey in advance.
Never obey in advance when you're being oppressed. Never, ever, ever.
Tell me about that.
So when someone's coming for you, right? When someone's coming for your freedom, authoritarianism, right? Tyrannical, right? Like you don't give them what they want, which is your freedom, right? You don't give up your freedom until they take it. They have to take your freedom from you.
And what does that look like give me an example of today. I understand the theory.
Not crossing out a word until you get a court order.
Got it.
That you say women have fought hard to be recognized, and I don't, and what I know to be true, you can't actually do equity underground.
Yeah.
Equity work in the dark, it's like being a mistress. Yeah. Like he might say he loves you, but he's married to the person.
He's married to the racist. Right.
So, you can receive whatever love he gives you, but don't get it twisted.
Right. Exactly. I get it. And also, I guess that would be an understanding that an executive order does not change a law.
And
laws have to be legislated.
But also, like, laws get changed that companies ignore all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
EPA regulations.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, work from home. Right. Like all of this kind of stuff. Right. Like corporations will fight to be able to run the business the way they want to run the business.
Right. Exactly.
So all of a sudden for them to be like, oh, shucks, we just got to take it out because it's so hard.
I didn't want
to
do it.
I love you, baby, but I just need you to not call me at night.
Yeah.
We're still together, though.
Yeah.
But my wife is wondering why my phone is ringing. So I still love you. Right.
Right.
That's what that's saying.
Let me call you from the office. Only.
Let me call you from the. No, I want to be on your Instagram.
Right.
Right. I want to be on your website.
Right.
I want people to know we're booze. That I'm your bae.
But so when the culture wants to live in 1619 and they don't love you anymore. Okay. There's really no reason to negotiate in here anymore.
No, and especially when you realize that they've been 1619 and it's been all your hard work that's gotten you a little bit of rights. And now you're about to lose out of court again.
We were not full participants in this. It took death and legislation to get you what you got. And the legislation they gave you in 1964 and 1965 expires. You have to renew it. It's not
the right. And it wasn't even, and y'all didn't even change your mind enough that it could stay.
It could stay.
Right? Same with Roe.
It's like the 14th Amendment. Yeah, y'all got all of this. 13th and 14th Amendment. Y'all got all of this, but we got laws that are going to get around it.
Right. Or like you said, ask me next year if I feel the same way about you.
Yeah, right.
And then what we're saying as Black women, and this is why I love this circle up that we're doing right now. What we were saying as Black women was, okay, yeah, we'll ask again next year.
Yeah.
Rather than, I think a part of what we're saying now is we're not asking. We are going to live our lives.
Right.
And you can like it or you cannot like it. But we're done giving two shits about what you think about me. Is not my business.
Exactly. I would say that. And I right now, I can't even think of an example where that could go wrong.
It can't.
It can't.
And it part of what went wrong, and, you know, this is something that I reflected on, especially when I would think back to, like, the elders, and especially some of the elder women, and just how angry and, you know, I mean, they were lovely people, but they had this edge, you know? Like, they had this edge to themselves. And I realize now, right, they was tired, right? Like, they were sick and tired of being sick and tired. They got something. no one could respect it enough to actually protect it in a real way. Because everyone was so happy to get into whatever little, you know, whatever little power base they could.
Yes.
And we started believing we were actually getting somewhere. And these elders who they had been through four cycles of getting somewhere and not getting nowhere were like, just and put the sand in the gears.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, there's this belief, philosophy, political philosophy that is based on integration was the worst thing to ever happen to Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And that the civil rights movement only made us full consumers.
Mm-hmm.
It only gave us the right to be full consumers. It gave us no power. It gave us no access to wealth. We could just have a good job. How many Black banks are in this country and how much money do they have?
Mm-hmm.
Not enough to save the race. Not enough to finance the race.
And how many Black millionaires bank at Black banks? It's not right. Not where you're putting your money. They can't give you anyway. That's all another thing.
But back in the day, the Black millionaires had no other place to put their money.
That's right.
Madam C.J. Walker was in a Black bank.
That's right.
She had nowhere else to put her money. The white banks didn't want her money.
That's right.
The white people didn't want her to have a business. So integration may not have served us.
Absolutely. And I think these are the conversations that we actually want to have.
Yeah. These are the conversations. Yeah.
You know, like, did integration or with them resegregating, should we be like, all right, fine, peace out.
Peace out.
And like, be out, right? I mean, like, you also think about the civil rights movement, right? Split.
Yeah.
Not everyone wanted to go after the vote, right? I mean, you had folks like Bob Moses that said we should go after education as a right.
Right. Education is right.
And Martin Luther King won out, right? The vote won out.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could debate either side, right? Like, I can't say, oh, it should have been the vote because now look how good we're doing. Maybe if we were smart, we would have come up with some better ideas. I don't know. But it's, as you said, we got done what we could get done on a slippery slope with a bunch of butter with people shooting at us.
Right. And a couple of banana peels.
And now we just going to slide down, right, get up, dust ourselves off, and walk to another game. Because they're not even, America ain't even the best game in town right now.
No. No. You hear all these people talking about they're going to go, if we get into a war with Canada, they're going to fight for Canada.
That's it. Or go to Brazil. You know, Brazil is having this beautiful, you know, Black awakening right now.
They are.
Mexico's doing this awesome stuff with this woman president. You know, New Zealand elected Jacinta, right?
Like, you know, you talk about sisters. That Mexican president, she's my jam.
I mean,
She's man enough for him.
That's it.
Okay? She is man enough for him. Okay? She's like, whatever. Okay, but that's not how this is going to unfold. Come back next year and see how I feel about you.
That's it.
So, but the integration piece, it is a conversation we need to have because, you know what, we have been so segregated from white people on purpose since we've gotten integration. If you get on a bus, this is the cliche, you get on the bus, we all sit in the back. We just wanted the right to sit in the front. We don't want to sit up there. If you look at the finest restaurants in the largest cities in this country that have large Black income, Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, we're not in their restaurants except one or two. How many times, Malia, have you gone into a fine white restaurant and been, is you and the waiter?
That's it.
Right? So where do we eat? We're already eating somewhere else. We're already, it's not that we don't go out. We're eating somewhere else or we're having folks over. We have segregated ourselves. We're not in their clubs. You know,
that's right.
We're not following their music. You know, they're following us.
That's right.
And at some point, I think this is the point, right? Do you think this is the time?
I think not only is this the time.
Yeah.
But we have never had more than we will have.
Right.
Because we are losing rights, right? So we will never be as free. We will never have the access with cell phones and books, and as we do right now.
Right now. As we do right now. So this is the time to use this power, this access, to redesign.
To love each other.
Right.
The redesign is whatever comes up with after we've just loved on each other.
Right.
You know, like I think like that, I feel like 2025 is this moment of us just hugging, like you and that sister, right? Like she felt that hug. When you said stay safe, that was a verbal hug.
Yes. And she felt it. She turned back around immediately and like, and we must have stood at that counter talking for another 20 minutes and we were both finished.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and you had already been there a minute because it was Black Hair Salon.
Right. Well, no, this, okay, it's another story. Another story about this Black Hair Salon. Run with precision.
Oh.
I mean, if you're more than 5 minutes late, you have to reschedule. Run with total.
CDC, Chocolate City.
No, precision.
Okay, so tell another story.
Another story. We're talking about sisters taking care of each other. Find a hair that style, find a salon that runs with
that you. Respects your time.
Respects your time. Okay? Okay. The year of loving each other. I love that. I absolutely love that. And I'm going to take that with me through all of my posts, my energy, talks I do, that this is the year of loving each other. I'm going to take it to Pookie. I'm going to take it to the CEO of that university. That's it right. Really is that we're under siege. We've been under siege since the first boat landed and colonialism got there.
And we must have been under siege before then because someone put us on the damn boat.
Well, we were in wars with each other, which is just
exactly. Fine. Like, so we was right. Already tired.
That's right. Justified.
We were already a prisoner of war.
There was just a war going on. It doesn't mean you get to come take their children. They just had a war. Everybody has a war. The French and the English have a war. Did they go take their children?
What was that? I think it was Trevor Noah and Owens, whatever, from The Daily Show. And he was like, we're suing you, Trevor, because y'all put us on the boat. You saw we didn't come back.
You saw we didn't come back. We should have done something. Text somebody. And that's what, wait a minute. Where's the Owl's son? Yeah.
And like this laughter, right? Like this is the year of love, right. Joy, hugs.
Right. It is clear they don't want us. And they're not going to be convinced.
Mm-mm.
I have a dear friend who says that this is the best thing that ever happened to Black people.
You know, if you're Trotskyite, why not? Right? It is. I mean, burn it down to be free.
Or walk away from it and let them burn it down themselves.
Right. When the house is burning.
Right. Well, you will walk away. You know, like you're not going to go into the, integrate into the burning house. We're just going to like, that's too bad about your house.
That's too bad about your house. Yeah. And maybe I don't even say that because I'm busy building this house with my sister friends over here.
We just smelled the smoke.
We smelled the smoke and said, damn, that smells like that's on fire. Keep hammering nails.
That's right. Keep pounding your nails. Right? Mm-hmm. Pounding your nails. Yeah. I think that the state of Black women, I guess, was the start of this conversation.
It's strong.
It's strong.
I mean, we got the numbers now. 92%. We got receipts. The state is connected.
Right.
We are aligned with our vision.
Right.
Even if we don't know each other. What we know is that this woman is better than fascism. And that's all we need to know about that. Everyone else is a fool. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to turn this back on you a little bit. I'm going to tell the audience that just prior to recording this podcast with Malia, I was a guest on her podcast called Sunflower Spa. Beautiful name. And we talked about elements of resiliency. And she had three key words she wanted me to come into and to explain and to share my own stories around. So I'm going to start it. The words are power, purpose, and pleasure. Where do Black women get their power?
Each other. I mean, I think, you know, you and everyone check out our conversation.
I'm going to link it in the description.
But I think we find our power from each other and from the earth. I think I think we still have very much an attachment to the wind, to the sky, to space, to the ocean, to land.
Yeah.
And I think that also gives us an interconnectedness, which gives us a power.
I think so. Okay. Purpose.
Oh.
Purpose.
So our purpose right now is to learn about liberation by freeing ourselves.
Ooh.
Right? I mean, we were trying to push liberation through working harder than, you know.
Say that again. Our purpose, say the whole sentence again.
Our purpose is to figure out liberation by freeing ourselves, right? Is to bring upon liberation by freeing ourselves. Like, you can't teach it if you don't do it, right? And we got to do it. And what we've been doing is using all of our superpowers, using all of our stuff for this house. Well, guess what? We got tools to build a house, and our purpose now is to build that house and to not care if nobody doesn't want to come or if they think, well, the white lady's house is nicer, to not care about none of that, to build our house because it is on fire. Their house is on fire. And the best thing we can do is have a place for our people.
That's beautiful. That was purpose. The next one is pleasure.
So I think we're getting into this nap ministry a bit. You know what I mean?
Nap ministry.
Yeah, find it on Instagram. Yes. I forget the woman's name. She's brilliant. Mm-hmm. She wrote this whole book, Rest as Resistance.
I'll link that in.
I don't know if that's the name of the book, but that's her move. Her movement is Rest as Resistance.
Okay.
Her movement is, your boss is pissing you off, take a nap. Like, fuck your boss. Like, the most liberated Black women could do, the most liberated thing Black women could do is get sleep. And I agree.
I do. There's nothing like a nap. It is the most powerful thing you do.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's really, I think we're taking part of that on, right? I think we are resting more. Yeah. I think we're making sure we're getting our nails done, right? I think we're making sure that we're having little kikis here and there, you know,
in our group texts, in our memes,
in our Black Twitters. I think we're finding a little more in ourselves pleasure, you know, but not enough. I think we're still, I think a lot of Black women are still sort of under this guise, you know, at Sunflower Spa, you know, our core audience are Black women, and Christianity, the conservatism of a home, right? And I'm not talking about political conservatism. You know, I'm talking about, you don't want to be fast, right? The worst thing you could be is a faster.
Oh, God, you want to be fast. Yes.
Right? But maybe you do want to be fast, because maybe that is
necessarily sexual.
Right, but even if it is sexual, right? Like, Black women take on.
Is
that they end up suppressing their sexual pleasures.
Ah, yes.
They end up either becoming tools for legacy or for pleasure of other people. But they don't take on, well, I want, right? I might want to hold it up for a week. And I will. You know what I'm saying? And when I do, I hope I better come each time.
Right.
And I'm going to find that voice.
Right, right.
You know?
It's not even a voice. It's a freedom of expression without judgment.
That it's the shame and the judgment around Black women having pleasure. That is what we need to lose. That is what I think we know how to please ourselves. We know what we like. But we still live by, you know, we still got to be everyone's Mamie. Yeah. Everyone, yeah. You know? Yeah. And not everyone. We need to be our mammy first. We need to nurse ourselves first. We need to please ourselves first. And Black women, when it comes to pleasure, like when it comes to martyrdom, we'll put ourselves first all day long. When it comes to pleasure, everyone in our community will be happy. And then we'll say that brings us pleasure.
That was absolutely on fire. Okay. That was on fire.
And it's not
we
good.
We need to mammy ourselves first. Absolutely.
And let's not do it, ladies. It's like not the flex we think it is. It's not cute. And it's why our elders were so tired, so hunchback, varicose veins. You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, you know what? And they didn't have the pleasure of nail salons on every corner. They didn't have the pleasure of disposable income to get their hair done as often. I mean, you know, people out here spending $600 on their hair. That's disposable income.
That is.
That's disposable income. This is my concern. Yes, we need to mammy ourselves. But with that much disposable income, how much do you have in savings?
Well, now, I don't want to talk about
it. How are you building? That's a whole other show.
Exactly.
That's a whole other show.
And also, but what I will say is, as someone who's not a devout capitalist, save it with your girlfriends.
I'm just saying, have a resource that you're building something so when the white man don't want you no more.
$600 every quarter is not going to get you.
No, that's true.
And let's not over. So get your hair done, girl. Good, look good for the Beyonce show.
Yeah.
Hopefully you'll meet some new
or for yourself woman. While you're taking a nap.
Exactly.
Be cute taking that nap.
Right. Exactly. You know what I mean? Where, like at our last podcast or the podcast that we just recorded, you were telling me about this amazing woman, Barbara
who
was unapologetically her and would show up in her fox coats and, you know, yes.
And it taught me to have my breakfast in my Waterford Crystal.
In your
water. It should not be something special.
The
company is no more special than me.
Exactly. Yes. But we can double down. I think like power and purpose we have. Mm-hmm. I think it's inherent. We wouldn't be standing here if we didn't, right? Our great, great, great grandmothers made sure of it. And that's how they survived.
Yeah.
But that pleasure one, shame, guilt, we just don't please ourselves.
We don't.
Enough.
We don't take moments of silence to just be.
Mm-hmm.
We're always on this rapid fire. I gotta go here. I gotta do this. I gotta be this. I gotta do that. But it's about just being. And being is not your job. It's not the man you're dating. Being is not your kids.
That's exactly right.
It is just who you be.
Who you be.
And you can only find her in silence. And most people are afraid of the silence. When you get used to the silence, you can create pleasure.
Yep. And she's also in dancing.
She says she does dance, doesn't she? And she sings out loud like Aretha.
Find out who you are. I mean, exactly. And it's those moments, right? Letting your body, let your soul run stuff for five minutes.
And be willing to dance naked.
Exactly.
Just dance.
Exactly. It'll get addictive.
It will. It will. So that you can, if you have that pleasure, as a coach, I would say, once you get that, you can have that pleasure, your purpose becomes clear. Your power is even greater.
It becomes more fun.
And it becomes more fun. Malia Lazu, that's a perfect place to end this at the State of Black Women. Yes, yes.
We're becoming more fun.
Exactly.
Love it.
For those of you who follow me on social media, you know that I have dedicated the month of April to being blackety black. April is the marks an anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, which turned a lot of stuff into disarray when we had an orderly moving forward, whatever that was going to be. But month of April is my blackety black month. So, Malia, thank you for being the second podcast in my blackety black month of understanding the purpose, the power, and the pleasure of being born to African people.
Oh, what a blessing.
Yes.
What a blessing it was.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Love you, sis.
All righty then. Thanks for joining us again for Unshackled Leadership. We'll see you next show. Peace and blessings. We've just completed another episode of Unshackled Leadership, a lantern for Black women. Our goal? To leave you feeling empowered and ready to take your next step with confidence and grace. A huge thanks to our audio engineer, Grammy Award-winning artist and producer, Carolyn Malachi, and to Darren Neplett, who composed our theme music. Your talent makes all of this possible. We're in our third season, so not to miss an episode, make sure you subscribe. Your support helps us grow. I'm your host, Joya Jefferson Nuri. I hope to have you back.